listening to Football in Europe, the weekly podcast covering the game across the continent.
Thanks for downloading the show. I'm Rob Daly. Coming up this week, the legendary Francesco Totti is exiled from the Roma squad. Chris Parrott is here to explain why. I was at Leverkusen against Borussia Dortmund on Sunday with ITV Bundesliga commentator Mark Scott when the game took a rather bizarre turn.
The referee was speaking to his assistant. They ran off. This is one of the most bizarre situations I've ever seen.
So the Leverkusen players and the Dortmund players are still on the pitch.
And both, I think, are talking with each other, asking what on earth is going on?
More on that to come. Arsenal face Barcelona in the Champions League. Do the Gunners stand any real chance? Plus, ESPN FC's French football correspondent Mark Rodden gives us the latest on Serge Aurier, the suspended Paris Saint-Germain defender.
It is just a mistake at the end of the day. Maybe it's something that he can come back from. Blanc hasn't said that publicly, but that seems to be the feeling now, that maybe he has the backing of enough squad members as well. Blaise Matuidi came out, said, you know, he's a friend of everyone in the squad. We need him.
And of course, we have a Europa League preview along with our Champions League preview for Spurs, Manchester United and Liverpool fans.
This is Football in Europe.
Alongside me today, Chris Parrott. Chris, thanks for coming back on the podcast.
No worries.
What were you doing at the weekend?
I was watching the next generation of United youngsters.
And how are they?
Yeah, they've got some rather good players they've picked up recently. A guy called Callum Gribben, who's actually quite a lot of press on him, but looks like one of those left-footed number 10s who just seems to have so much time on the ball.
Right.
Yeah, and they've got another guy called DJ Buffonge, who was also left-footed.
What's the name? DJ Buffonge?
DJ Buffonge, good name, eh?
What a great name.
Yeah, but he...
I'll be embarrassed in a few years' time when he's a big dog.
Yeah, well, exactly, yeah. But they're both left-footed, and they both sort of played as the 10. And it was really odd. Like, West Brom didn't know what hit them, to be honest. They were just running, like, chasing shadows. But it was really good.
So we got lots to get through this week. Champions League, Europa League again. Let's start with Trabzonspor. A story about the Turkish club who at the weekend picked up just a few red cards.
Yeah,
what's the story here, Chris?
They finished with seven men away at Galatasaray.
Oh, it's like on FIFA when you sort of...
yeah, he's just giving
just
up.
Just hacking away. Yeah, yeah.
But that was only half of the story, in all honesty. So they were down to nine men. It was 1-1. 87th minute, Kavanda gets sent off. And shall we say, they're not very happy. They chase the referee around. He ends up dropping his red card. Sally Dursen at this point loses it, picks up the red card, does what we've all wanted to do on a football pitch, shows the referee a red card.
Isn't that like what Gazza did?
Yeah.
Gazza did that before.
Gazza did it at Rangers.
At Rangers, yeah.
So referee,
and he got booked.
Yeah, he got booked. This time the referee promptly snatched back the red card, sends him off as well.
So
they're down to seven men. Seven men, that's almost game called off territory, I think.
Yeah, one more and it's over.
Yeah, yeah. And to add insult, Galatasaray then go win the game.
So what is there any ramification of this, or is this just all done and dusted like
today in Trabzon? There must have been hundreds, if not thousands, of Trabzonspor fans all marched through the city holding red cards up.
Oh, excellent.
Only in Turkey.
Like that, only in Turkey. If you do enjoy the podcast, by the way, please leave us a review on iTunes and tweet us using at FIE Podcast. Quick one on Serie A at the weekend. Roma beat Palermo 5-0. Edin Dzeko did miss the worst open goal I have ever seen. But he did score twice in a victory that Roma managed to accomplish without Francesco Totti, who has been a big story in Italy this weekend, Chris, because Luciano Spalletti, the returning head coach, essentially has kicked him out of the squad, right?
Yeah, exactly. Said he was going to play him. He's 39, remember? 40 in September. He was excluded from the squad. Comments made to a state broadcaster, which were aired before the match when...
By Totti, these were, yeah.
By Totti, when basically he sort of said that there is little to no relationship with Spalletti. It's just a good morning or a good evening. So Spalletti dropped him and has basically said, doesn't matter how many goals you scored for the club, it's on current form, it's I pick my best 11. At some stage, Francesco Totti can't go on forever. This is a personal opinion, but if anyone can go in, if Garcia had have made that decision, you'd imagine the Roma fans would just be...
Oh, so you think Spalletti does carry the weight and gravitas at the club and...
Well,
do that.
He certainly carries enough. I think he's got currency in the bank from his first spell in charge.
Right.
But I don't think he's doing it because he's just come back in. I think he's saying he's doing it for the benefit of the team, for the best 11. So Totti was in the stands having pictures taken with the fans. There were banners in support of him.
Oh, dear.
So, you know, it a great watch. And there's some brilliant pictures online which you should go and have a look about Totti. But we've seen this in England last couple of years, like with Gerrard when he was... not quite the same player at Liverpool. What do you do as a coach because you have to pick your best 11, and Roma are in a real battle for the third
Champions
League.
But is Totti looking at it? Because Roma have been pretty poor in the past 2 or 3 months, thinking, maybe incorrectly thinking, I can improve that team. I'm better than half those lot.
For him, maybe unfortunate then that Roma scored 5 goals.
Yeah, exactly.
And also there was a moment earlier this month, I think it was against Sassuolo, when he was on the bench and he started playing kick-ups with a ball boy and was generally joking around with Milan Pjanic, which was lovely to see. And at the time, Spalletti joked about it. But I just wonder if that as well, it's, hang on, you're on the bench. It's difficult.
But it must be. It's a big story in Italy, right? I mean, I'm sure they can't believe it.
Well, for our lifetime, basically, Francesco Totti has been... He's one of Roma's all-time greats. He's one of Italy's all-time greats as well. But it's going to be interesting to see what happens in their next game. Will he be back in the squad? Will he be back on the bench?
Yeah, we'll keep an eye on that, of course, on Football in Europe. Also, the weekend in Italy, Juventus dropped points for the first time in 16 league games. They were held to a 0-0 draw by Bologna, so a chance for Napoli to apply some further pressure in Serie A. More from Chris in a moment, because we're going to look at the upcoming Champions League games, and Juve are in Champions League action this week. But on Sunday, I went to see Leverkusen against Borussia Dortmund at the Bayer Arena with ITV Bundesliga commentator Mark Scott. We sat in with the away fans, the Dortmund fans of the game, which was great fun, and we got chatting to some of them as well in what turned out to be a rather bizarre afternoon.
You're listening to Football in Europe.
I am inside the Bayer Arena, and alongside me is Mark Scott.
What a fantastic setting this is, and what luck we've had with where we're going to be sat, because you might be able to hear just behind us, we've got the Dortmund ultras in full voice already, and you know we're still 10-15 minutes away from kickoff.
Third versus second in the Bundesliga. It's where the Dortmund could keep pace with Bayern after they beat Darmstadt yesterday. So big game for both teams actually, because Leverkusen are on a good run.
Yeah, Leverkusen, I actually commentated on their win away at Sporting in the week, and it was an impressive performance from them. I think there's 13 points between them and Dortmund, so realistically it's about the battle to get that last automatic Champions League place.
We've flown in and out of Düsseldorf, which is about 15 minutes away from the Bayer Arena. 15-minute walk from the station. What have you made of the match day experience in Leverkusen?
Very impressed again, as I was when we went to Schalke earlier on this year. Everything works very smoothly. Getting in was no problem. We did have to leave our... Well, the thing is, we got told that we couldn't bring certain items in, like your expensive hair gel, which I knew you did want to chuck away because it costs you quite a bit of money because you care about your appearance and trying to look like Marco Reus. But very handily, there was somewhere where we could put our bags for only €1.
And in general, the Bundesliga matchday experience is you can have a beer at your seat. It's all quite cheap. You buy a top-up card and you put money on that and buy your beer and your food with that.
The thing is, when we first got told that we had to buy a prepaid card, we thought it was a nuisance, really. But as it turns out, it smooths everything over. You go up, you put your card in, everyone gets served very quickly. Like you say, the beers that we've got, I think, are €4. So far, so good.
That's the Dortmund fans who have just started punching the air. So they're in like a enclosed standing section with a high fence, which sit with banners that say ultras, and you can hear them now in full voice.
Yeah, flags waving. It's a sea of yellow and black, as you'd expect. And I think we've got the best of both worlds because we're close enough to experience it, but we're not actually in there trying to keep our footing.
Exactly. The Nord Curve, the Nord Stand, is also filled up nicely. That's where the Leverkusen ultras are down that end. So it's time for the game.
Dortmund fans are that, you can say in words, that's very special. Very special in the world.
In Leverkusen, and we have the opening goal.
Fantastic move from Dortmund. Marco Reus was the architect behind it. I was just saying a minute or so before, we haven't seen too much of him, but splendid ball, wonderful work, and Aubameyang couldn't miss. And it's just what the game needed, really. It hasn't been a bad game, but that, as you said, probably the first shot on target.
Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang says he would like to go to Madrid one day. Do you think he will stay or will he leave?
After the next 1-2 2 years, maybe he will go to Madrid. But
it seems like a bit of a shame for Dortmund that you have so many good players that then end up leaving to go somewhere else.
I think it's an honor to bring out so many talented players. However in the world they will play, in Dortmund they always give the best, and if the time has come.
So absolute chaos. Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang's just scored, and the referee went over to his assistant. There was a talk with Wendell, the Leverkusen left back, and the referee just shot down the tunnel with his assistants.
We were just talking about that goal. The referee was speaking to his assistant. They ran off. This is one of the most bizarre situations I've ever seen.
So the Leverkusen players and the Dortmund players are still on the pitch.
And both, I think, are talking with each other, asking what on earth is going on. Interestingly, all the Dortmund fans around us are on their phones, looking on Twitter and social media to try and find out what on earth is happening.
The players are now going down the tunnel. Obviously, when this goes out, we'll know what will have happened. But
I did see a member of the Leverkusen coaching staff having a real go at the assistant referee. And I just wondered if it was about the goal and they thought that there was something in the build-up. But
there's no one on the pitch now. Everyone's gone. It's 5 o'clock in Germany.
And we've got a flight home.
We do. So I hope they come back out, because at the moment, the game's
Suspended.
Match suspended.
Yeah, we don't know. We stand here and we were confused and we didn't know what's going on.
Does this kind of thing happen in Germany a lot?
No, first time. First time.
So the whistles have died down. The players are back out. Roger Schmidt, I cannot see him in the dugout. And Marky looks like we're going to get back underway now.
It does. There is still a bit of conflab going on between some of the Leverkusen coaching staff and the fourth official, I think. But we are back underway. And, it was a game that we said until the goal, not much had happened. Plenty has happened now.
We're now into added time, and Marco Reus had a one-on-one with Bernd Leno, saved to win it for Dortmund for 2-0. Javier Hernandez at the other end, great chance.
Brilliant hit, off the post. And what was funny was that all the Dortmund fans around us started clapping.
As if the post was one of their players.
Yeah, you know, like applauding the post, which you don't really see.
When the referee took all the players off the pitch, what did you think was happening?
I read it on my smartphone, and
the coach of Leverkusen claimed that the referee free kick take part at this point. So
it wasn't offside. Not offside.
The free kick wasn't taken from the right position.
From the right position, okay. It was taken for 5 meters from the right position. Okay. Roger Schmidt was attacking the referee. The referee said, "Let's play. It's a goal." But coach of Leverkusen said it was 5 meters behind that point. So
have you ever seen that before?
I've seen that before in the under classes of football, where we play football. But I've never seen that
in the Bundesliga
or sure. Second Bundesliga.
For more, head to the website footballineurope.co.uk.
So it was a bizarre but ultimately enjoyable day at Leverkusen with Mark. And since that game, the German FA have backed Felix Fayer's decision to suspend the game. The referee also actually spoke to media after the game. He said that Roger Schmidt had acted in an unsporting way in refusing to be sent off, essentially. And Schmidt also did apologise afterwards. Chris Parrott's alongside me. Chris, what do you think about the referee coming out and explaining his thinking?
Yeah, big fan. I think I understand they can't do it always, and they would be wrong to do it always. I wonder if he sought permission before he did that from the German FA, if, you know, because it's a big call otherwise to sort of go against the grain. But I think fans, journalists would love it, of course. But I think a lot of fans would like if they came out and explained the decisions. And I reckon 90% of the time you'd totally understand why they did it. And you would, if you were angry about a decision, even if they had got it wrong, I think you would.
If they break it down rationally.
Yeah. And also, I remember when Kalina did a thing with Carragher and someone else on Sky last year, and they went through a game. Souness might have been there, and Souness and Carragher were all booting off about a couple of decisions, and Kalina was like, no, he got that right because of this, this and this. You think, well, how did they not know that? But then you thought, actually, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was an interesting, because apparently that's never happened in Germany before. So that was why that was an interesting case. A couple of other stories from the Bundesliga at the weekend. 28-year-old Hoffenheim head coach Julian Nagelsmann got his first win with the club, a 3-2 victory over Mainz. Cologne fans stayed away from their derby, the fierce derby with Borussia Mönchengladbach. The ultras in particular of Cologne are not happy because tickets for the game, the away game, had to be personalised. And the club is also getting a lower allocation. It's because there has been a fair amount of trouble between the two sets of fans in recent years. Bayern beat Darmstadt by 3-1, although they were trailing that game. Thomas Müller with an outrageous chest and sort of overhead kick type goal, which was just wonderful. He did actually get two in that game. Bayern getting that win, Chris, going into their test with Juventus in the Champions League, a tough round of 16 draw for both of those teams.
Really hard. You can make a case for Arsenal-Barca being the tie of the round. I think, personally, this is 18 finals between them historically, but current day, they're top dogs as well, which makes it absolute blockbuster. Juve reached the final last season, only beaten by a brilliant Barcelona team. There's so many subplots. Vidal going back.
Kingsley Coman, even.
Kingsley Coman, exactly. Bayern have lots of injury problems at the back. Boateng, Martinez, Badstuber are out. But Bernatti has returned to full training, but that weakens them. And you have the likes of Dybala in brilliant form at the moment. Mandzukic, another subplot against his old club, is a doubt. Chiellini too. So there are injury problems. But I think Bayern are favourites, only just. And when the draw was made, Juve weren't quite in the same place they are now. I think it's a really hard draw for both teams.
Barcelona, meanwhile, in La Liga, extended their lead at the top of the table to 8 points after beating Las Palmas 2-1. Luis Suarez scored, and he is the first striker in Europe's top five leagues to find the back of the net 25 times. So Barcelona go to Arsenal. Do they have any chance, Arsenal, of getting through that tie?
It's a slim one. What did Wenger say in his press conference? No team's perfect. Barca aren't far from it. I mean, they beat Bayern at home. It was in the group stage, I know. They can take confidence from that. I don't think that says an awful lot, in truth. They're going to have to play more defensively. I don't think...
Well, they did against Bayern, didn't they?
They did against Bayern.
Yeah, they conceded possession.
And maybe they'd learnt a bit, because I think in past years they've tried to go toe-to-toe thinking they're as good as these teams. And no disrespect, they're not, because Barca are exceptional. They definitely have a chance at home. I think over two legs, I just think stopping Messi, Suarez, Neymar for 180 minutes is... difficult.
So 90 minutes, you think you can do it?
Yeah.
For two legs?
Yeah. Which is why, and I might be proved wrong, you know, that Arsenal might dump them out, but I think the best chance of beating Barca might be in the final.
Real Madrid dropped points in La Liga. They drew 1-1 with Malaga. Ronaldo had a penalty saved as well in that game. But despite the fact they're 9 off Barca, do you think they've got any chance of challenging Barca for the title now? Is it too big a gap?
I might have to disagree with the great man Zidane.
What's he saying?
Disagree with him from a table in Wandsworth?
Yeah, sure.
He says La Liga isn't lost in any way, shape or form. I think that might be a little bit.
The remaining Clásico is at Barca, isn't it?
Yeah, they'd have to win that. They'd still only be 6 points behind. How many points did Barca drop? I know Zidane can't come out and say anything else, but I think that's probably the title wrapped up.
Atletico, meanwhile, were held to a 0-0 draw by Villarreal, who are fourth in the table. And despite dropping off the title pace slightly, Diego Simeone's side do stay second in La Liga, ahead of facing PSV in the Champions League this week. The Times Spanish football journalist Joseph Castanelli told me last week, we didn't use this on the show, but we kept this back because he made an interesting point about Atletico going under the radar in Spain.
Nobody has really talked about Atletico as contenders either domestically or in Europe, which is very surprising. If you look at their record, you know, they've only conceded 10 goals in 24 games in the league this season, which by anybody's standards is incredible. In the top, I'd imagine in the whole of Europe, no side has conceded fewer goals, or certainly in the top leagues anyway. You know, they've got Diego Godin, Jose Maria Jimenez and Jan Oblak as sort of a triangle at the back who are just immovable. They're definitely going under the radar. They're sneaking a lot of wins, 1-0, 2-1. You know, another team might not have been able to get the victory, but they're just doing it. They're rolling on and they're actually ahead of Real Madrid in the table, which a lot of people forget. The Spanish press seem to forget that, given the amount of coverage they're giving to Real Madrid and how they're talking about, you know, there is a league title battle going on. So They're going under the radar, and I think that they've got a favourable draw in the Champions League. You know, if you'd have offered them PSV Eindhoven before the draw was made, they'd have bitten your hand off. So they'll be looking to move forward in Europe, and they'd be my tip as an outside bet to reach the final.
So Atletico come up against PSV Eindhoven side, who are challenging to defend their Eredivisie title. PSV, remember, came through a group with Manchester United to reach the round of 16. And you may remember earlier in the season, a few weeks back, we spoke to De Graafschap midfielder Andrew Driver, who's playing in the Eredivisie. And when we asked him who's the toughest player he come up against in his time in the Netherlands, he said it was PSV striker Luke de Jong, who of course had that rather unsuccessful spell at Newcastle United.
He only had half a season though, didn't he? So yeah, and the thing is, you'd expect like a big striker to make it in England and to adapt well. So I don't know what happened, but he does look a class apart to me in this league. I think he just brings players into the game. He's just a big striker that more skillful than you'd think.
The remaining Champions League game, Chris, Dinamo Kiev against Manchester City. What does City have to be wary of for that trip?
A very good team, I think, first and foremost. You saw that against Chelsea. They finished ahead of Porto in their group. Andre Yarmolenko, Junior Moraes are back from injury, apparently. It's going to be a full stadium as well, which it wasn't when the draw was made. So there'll be 70-odd thousand Dinamo Kiev fans there. Because they've had Barcelona in the last couple of years, anybody is easier, and they won their group well. But I think it's still a difficult task. And, well, he rested everyone at Chelsea.
Yeah, what did you think to that in the FA Cup?
I was with him. I think it might have been slightly a protest because he wasn't happy that TV put them on Sunday
instead
of Saturday.
Five debutants in the City team that lost 5-1 to Chelsea.
Yeah, and I think his thing is, if you look around almost every other league, certainly France and Portugal, if Paris Saint-Germain are playing in the Champions League, they tend to play on the Friday night.
Juve played on Friday in Italy.
We saw at the start of the season that Italy were pretty close in the coefficient to overtaking England. We might need Manchester City to do well this season. You don't know because the way it's calculated. So why not give them the best opportunity? And not just give them the best opportunity, give Arsenal, give United, give whoever's in Europe. So, but it does definitely put more pressure on them having been thrashed by Chelsea. You'd expect them to go through over two legs, but I just wonder if Dinamo Kiev will get a result this week. I'm not saying they'll go through ultimately, but I think they'll get a result.
Okay, Europa League preview to come. Spurs, Manchester United and Liverpool fans will be talking about your fixtures too. But next, we hear from French football correspondent for ESPN FC, Mark Rodden. I spoke to him earlier today about Valbuena and Benzema, the latest with that, and also an update on Serge Aurier, the suspended PSG defender.
This is Football in Europe, Liga Roundup.
Mark, thank you very much for joining us on the podcast again.
No problem.
Let's start with the latest on Serge Aurier, who we talked about on the podcast last week about being in a lot of trouble after posting a video online, well, a Periscope video streaming online of him criticising his teammates and insulting the manager, Laurent Blanc. People, I'm sure, have seen this. Has there been a temperature change, if you like, in the mood about the incident in the past 7 days?
Yeah, I think so. Started with Laurent Blanc on Friday, his pre-match press conference. He said that, you know, with time, I think he used those exact words, things had cooled down a little bit. So obviously a shocking thing to happen. And on first hearing it, you're going to be pretty angry. But maybe, yes, it's very silly, but it is just a mistake at the end of the day. Maybe it's something that he can come back from. Blanc hasn't said that publicly, but that seems to be the feeling now, that maybe he has the backing of enough squad members as well. Blaise Matuidi came out, said, you know, he's a friend of everyone in the squad. We need him, you know, he's a great player. So he's been in Geneva the last few days training on his own, trying to keep shape himself. What he did was so out of character in terms of his public persona, at least, because he's good with the fans, he's one of the most accessible in terms of the media as well. And just what he did was just so stupid that I have the feeling that maybe helps him, because the club can just go, look, this is ridiculous, you're on your very last chance. Interestingly as well, France Football during the week published excerpts of an interview they did on the Thursday. He did his social media's Periscope video on the Saturday. And France Football did an interview on the previous Thursday that was for Wednesday's magazine the following week, in which Serge Aurier was talking about how he'd learned from his previous mistake on social media when he criticised UEFA referee.
No.
You know, said, you know, I didn't realise, you know, just at PSG, everything's multiplied by 100. It's talked about, it's picked up very quickly. Makes it seem all the more bizarre that then 2 days later he came out with these comments about his teammates and his manager. As I say, so ridiculous that maybe you can forgive him for it in a way.
Was it important, do you think, and was it interesting to you that Didier Drogba came out and almost tried to turn it a little bit and say, well, look, yeah, he made a mistake, but he's being unfairly treated. Of course, they've been international teammates for the Ivory Coast.
Yeah, exactly. He's getting a lot of support. You know, Yannick Noah is the head of the French Davis Cup team, the tennis former tennis player as well. He's a big figure in France. He came out, and obviously he's in a position of authority, and he said as well, look, he made a really silly mistake. Maybe, you know, he can learn from it as well. And just thinking back, I mean, you just have to go through football to think about all the crazy mistakes and crazy things that have happened. You know, Cantona's kung fu kick, Roy Keane leaving the Irish team and coming back to play for them, and now he's the assistant manager, Zinedine Zidane's headbutt, and now he's the Real Madrid manager. I mean, people have come back from a lot worse. You can't really say that it's a youthful mistake, because he's 23 now. He's already been through one high-profile error with that criticism of the referee after Zlatan was sent off against Chelsea last year. That earned him a three-match suspension. He missed the Champions League quarterfinals because of that. A year later, he's missing more big games. The likes of Drogba coming out and offering his support, offering the backing, is definitely helping. And I think people are just taking a step back. Yes, look, very silly comments about several of his teammates. but, you know, that's going to motivate you as well. The other thing that's helped him is the fact that he's such a good player. And, you know, if he's a lesser player, maybe PSG would cut their losses. But he'd command a massive fee in the transfer market. You know, he was bought for 12 million euros. He's probably worth at least double that now. And, you know, PSG players have been forgiven. Adrian Rabiot only before Christmas said he should get a Christmas present of a loan move if he loses his place once Verratti comes back. That didn't go down well. He was booed by the fans. He was criticised by the president, by Laurent Blanc. I think if Aurier comes back, he'll get similar treatments, but he can maybe win the fans back over if he's given the chance to do so.
But Mark, I mean, say you were at the office, and I know you're a nice guy, you wouldn't do this Periscope video, right? But say you had criticised a lot of people you work with, you'd be sacked. I mean, isn't it a case where it's just complete double, you know, a different set of rules for footballers? People look at this and say PSG should sack him.
True. But you have to deal with the world you're living in as well. He's an asset. That's the thing. You know, if
right, exactly that word, yeah.
Someone will buy him, and he'll go on to become a very good player if he gets his head right after this incident. So I think that's the main thing that's saving him. It's the main thing playing in his favour. Yes, you're from the Paris suburbs, you know, you've got mates, you want to please all your friends, you want to please all your fans, but it is a big responsibility playing for a club like Paris Saint-Germain.
Mark, Ezequiel Lavezzi, after it was sort of a little bit drawn out, but he has moved to China now, leaving Paris Saint-Germain. What's the deal and the reasoning for that transfer?
The reasoning from his point of view, I suppose, is 6 months left, or he had 6 months left on his contract, less than that now. He's 31 in May. Hasn't really been playing for PSG this season. He's looking at it thinking, look, one last big contract. And that's kind of in contrast to some of the other players who've gone there. You think of Alex Teixeira and Jackson Martinez, guys in the prime. Yeah, you know, it's a strange move from their point of view in many ways. But for Lavezzi, maybe not so much. I'm sure he would have liked to have been involved. He's a very popular member of the dressing room at PSG and with the fans as well. You saw that with the great send-off he got on Saturday, thrown into the air. Very strange scene, really, pre-game. I'm not sure what Rance made of that. You know, thrown into the air by his teammates, you know, punching the air. I thought that was great as well when he was being thrown up in the air. It was nice to see. Just never really imposed himself in the last couple of years, I suppose. You know, you look at his stats, just 3 starts in the league this season. That says a lot.
Mark, we're getting close to the European Championships now. And what is the latest with the Karim Benzema, Mathieu Valbuena situation?
Well, the latest is the judge has changed the terms of Benzema's judicial supervision slightly, so he is technically able to meet Valbuena again, not able to meet the other people charged in the case. Didier Deschamps was on speaking on Sunday night on French TV, just said, look, nothing has really changed in that sense because the case hasn't been decided, so he's still under suspicion for now. There's definitely a sense with everyone around French football in all the top positions that they could really do with Benzema, considering the form he's in. He wouldn't be the biggest loss in that. They look quite good with Martial and Griezmann, and Giroud's, you know, not the worst striker either. But the interesting thing for me is really the dip in form of Valbuena. He seems to have suffered a lot more from this incident. Doesn't have the same status as Benzema, even if he has been good for France. He's not really that massive star. He's the wrong side of 30. He moved to Lyon, who've had a terrible season, and Valbuena has really struggled as well. Understandably, I think, because he's been the focus of it. He's also in France as well, so he's reading the papers, he's hearing about it all the time. This problem mightn't actually arise for Deschamps if Benzema is cleared to play again, because it's all been about, you know, can they play together? How can they, you know, what will it do to morale in the squad? Well, at the moment, I'd say that Valbuena is in real danger of missing out anyway. Well, what a story that would be if Benzema bounces back from this and can lead them to glory at Euro 2016. Interesting one from yesterday as well. Didier Deschamps made a bit of a gaffe talking about Emerick Laporte of Athletic Bilbao, asked about whether he could be a replacement for Zuma. He said, well, look, there's competition, you know, there's the likes of Jeremy Mathieu at Barcelona, there's Kalidou Koulibaly at Napoli. You know who Koulibaly is, don't you? I mean, you asked the presenter, you know, who does he play for? Napoli. Okay, yeah, good. Problem with that was Deschamps didn't seem to realise that while Koulibaly represented France at underage level, he declared for Senegal in September and he's played 5 games for them. Didier Deschamps, I think, maybe has too many players to watch at the moment. He's forgotten one or two that aren't available.
Mark, let's talk about Belgium briefly as well, because you cover Belgium Pro League, and Gent were beaten by Wolfsburg in the Champions League last week, although they almost mounted a comeback. People may have seen that. They were 3-0 down and got it back to 3-2. But for Gent, who are the Belgian champions, they're having a bit of a tough time of it at the moment.
Yeah, it was at that game, actually. Gent, they were kicking themselves, and I think they felt they let themselves down. Sven Coombs, the captain, one of the players who was really good, the Belgian player of the year, and he didn't let himself down, that's for sure. I think Gent just showing signs after a great 18 months of running into their first real crisis under Hein van Haasbroek, their coach, who took over last season, led them to a first ever Belgian league title, led them to the last 16 of the Champions League. They were beaten 5-2. By Oostende on Sunday, a 4th defeat in 5 matches in all competitions. They've looked worried and looked unsure of themselves for the first time, really. That's been their trademark.
And Eurofoot Stadium on Twitter has tweeted us to talk about Anderlecht. He says Anderlecht are pretty grim these days. The players don't turn up for the smaller games, basically.
Well, I watched them yesterday and have to agree, they were terrible against Waasland Beveren away from home. Waasland Beveren struggling, fighting against relegation, hadn't won in 6, had a man sent off after 34 minutes, and Anderlecht never really looked like scoring. Dennis Pratt was sent off, a second booking, one of Anderlecht's star men, and from the free kick, Waasland scored the winner. So, big problem for Anderlecht this season after the Europa League. They had a good win on Thursday against Olympiacos, 1-0 in the first leg. Pressure on Besnikassi, their manager. They finished third last season. Some of the younger players haven't really kicked on like you'd expect them to. Is that the manager's fault? And Dennis Pratt as well. Just interesting for any Liverpool fans, probably fans of about 15 Premier League clubs. The general manager of Anderlecht confirming on Thursday that Dennis Pratt will be leaving this summer. You know, it's time for him to really back it up this season as well.
Follow the Football in Europe account on Audioboom for the latest podcasts, interviews and special features.
And a big thanks to Mark Rodden for coming on the podcast. As always, he is a very worthwhile follow on Twitter as well for French football news. Chris Parrott's with me. Chris, let's finish the podcast talking about the Europa League games this week. And we'll start with a game that you are covering. You're off to Manchester United against Midtjylland on Thursday, right?
Yeah, I think everyone expected United to get something. They got an away goal. It was a defeat. But if you look at the tie, which I know nobody will given what's going on, I think they're still favourites to go through. They should. I think Midtjylland are a fantastic story, though. I think signing players on stats, not necessarily seeing them in action first. They've scored almost 50% of their goals from set pieces, which was ironic because they didn't score a set piece against United. But for them, they don't have a big budget. You have to say it's worked because they won the Danish title.
And who scored that first goal, the guy everyone's talking about?
Pion Sisto. So I saw him in the under-21s. He didn't play that big a role, actually, for Denmark. But I saw him do an outrageous piece of skill on the sideline, you know, and they're just warming up and you're like, God, who's this character?
So this is a last summer's UEFA Euro under-21s.
Yeah, and of course, yes, Torup is now their coach, who was the Denmark coach and is very highly regarded. So I'd be shocked if Sisto is at Michelin beyond the summer. I think I still expect United to go through.
Liverpool take on Augsburg, having drawn 0-0 in Germany. I mean, it will be a very special occasion for those Augsburg fans, won't it, Chris?
Yeah, massive. I mean, what, it wasn't that long ago they were in the second Bundesliga and all of a sudden they're at Anfield, and 0-0 wasn't a bad result for Liverpool. It wasn't a bad one for Augsburg, though. There's no away goal there.
No away goal.
Do you think Augsburg will score at Anfield?
I haven't actually checked this before, but Raul Bobadilla pulled up in the first leg and had to come off very early. But they're a good counter-attacking team. Alexander Esswein's the winger, is the player I like the most by a long way. I just wonder if Bobadilla's not fit. Possibly not, I think, but he could have a very good evening at Anfield. And as we saw with Stoke in the League Cup semi-final, you know, they scored and frustrated Liverpool relatively easily.
And if they score, Liverpool have to score twice. Watch the post-match with Jurgen Klopp, and you could tell, I think it was Ray Stubbs asked him whether he was frustrated, whether he was a patient man, and he went, no, not really. And you could tell that, like, he's happy with about...
Well, so they've got the League Cup final at the weekend.
Yeah, well, they have, yeah.
So what do you do there? Do you risk playing a weaker team? You can win a trophy on Sunday and qualify for Europe in one game against Manchester City if you have a good day.
Yeah, it's very. That's a very good question.
Yeah. Over to you, Jurgen Klopp. And I'm commentating on Spurs against Fiorentina for Setanta on Thursday. 1-1 from the first leg in Florence. Dele Alli should definitely have been sent off in that game. But Fiorentina third in the table. Chris, what do Fiorentina bring?
Paolo Sosa, when he was at this country, was perceived to be quite a negative coach. But he's done an excellent job there. Mm. I wonder if we're talking about resting players... Liverpool, whether that cup defeat for Spurs might make, all of a sudden, they're only fighting on two fronts. They're in a title race themselves, so it's that problem now for Pochettino.
Well, they don't need the Europa League to qualify for the Champions League, because they probably will finish top four.
But they could win the Europa League.
They could win the league.
They could win the league, yeah.
Who's going to win the league? Have you got a team that you think will... The Premier League is...
If I had to back someone now, I would back Spurs. I think
would you? A lot of people are backing Spurs.
Because you'd have no idea what City team are going to turn up. They could be galvanised by Pellegrini leaving, but they haven't been, and Pep coming. But then I think a lot of their players probably know they're not going to play under Pep.
That's true, yeah.
So you know that thing of, oh, we're fighting for our future for the new coach. But if you know that you're very unlikely to play, then I don't know.
Very true. You've been tweeting us about Arsenal playing Barcelona in the Champions League and what you think is going to happen. Richard Kaufman says the home leg will be tighter than some might expect. Arsenal will adopt the tactics successful against Bayern. Barcelona looked a little jagged at the weekend, 1-1. That's Richard's prediction. And that's something we were talking about how they played against Bayern. Jonathan Stevens says 2-0 to Arsenal because I'm a Spurs fan and the big European club always lets me down against Arsenal. and La Liga Gav says, reckons Barcelona are going to go to North London and win 3-0.
I think the tie will still be alive ahead of the second leg.
Hope so.
Hope so.
We don't
absolutely
want 10 second legs, do we? No. Thank you very much for downloading the podcast. Keep your tweets coming in. Let us know what you think of the week's European news and what you thought of the podcast this week at FIE Podcast. And if you feel so inclined, please leave us a review on iTunes.
This is Football in Europe.